the difference between first place and second place in most events is less than 1%. You know, that's the difference between the champion and the person that's wishing that they were there. And so if you could find those couple little missing links that are going to put that person over the top, because there's a lot of people who are second place all the time, and they just haven't explored the nutritional territory enough to find those things that are going to put them there.
All right, welcome back. This is part two with Chris Talley. And for those of you who care deeply about what you're putting into your body, this will be a great conversation for you. If you haven't had a chance to listen to part one, I highly recommend it because it gives a framework for how Chris came to develop the insights that he's going to share with you. And he's just really good at what he does. So the journey to get this good, I think, is well worth the time to explore. And I also want to thank our partners, Athletic Greens, for supporting this podcast and all of our podcasts right now and allowing us to keep growing. So it's certainly timely that we're talking to Chris Talley about nutrition, and our partner is Athletic Greens. So I just want to thank them for the support. And if you hadn't had a chance yet, punch over to athleticgreens.com/findingmastery. You'll see what we're doing. You'll see about their company and learn a little bit more about their product. I love it. I use it every day. I really enjoy it. And they've got an amazing offer right now that maybe you can take advantage of before it's gone. And so with that, let's jump right into part two with Chris Talley. What is the one thing, or the one or two or three things that you are exceptional at? And it's like I'm saying brag. I don't mean it that way. I mean, like, what are your crown jewels? What are the things that you know that it have come easy, but you've put a lot of work on to take it as far as you can go?
It would be nutritional science. That's the territory that I'm in that, you know, if you're looking at and a very specific portion of nutritional science is a huge territory. I tend not to get involved in the disease state related things. It's fascinating, but it's just, again, if you're going to do something exceptional, you can't be good at all of them. And so anything performance oriented, where even if it's going to make that 0.5% difference, if you get a couple of those put together, the difference between first place and second place in most events is less than 1%. You know, that's the difference between the champion and the person that's wishing that they were there. And so if you could find those couple little missing links that are going to put that person over the top, because there's a lot of people who are second place all the time, and they just haven't explored the nutritional territory enough to find those things that are going to put them there.
And then when you think about, you narrow down or gate out all of the different parts of your life efforts and say, okay, it's nutrition science. And then if you were to take that same swath again around your strengths inside of nutrition science, what are the strengths there?
It would be in the nutritional blood test side of things. So that's pretty specific territory, but I know when people go back to really basic nutrition questions, a lot of times I'm dumbfounded by the simplest thing. Is someone, you know, my own mom asked me what she should eat for breakfast, then, you know, it's pretty difficult to answer that when you're dealing with a whole lot of technical information and that, you know, looking at someone's nutritional blood test and trying to come up with what's ideal for breakfast, and then someone just asks you general, you know, I actually have to put more answer or more effort into answering that.
So how, okay. So we'll get to the blood analysis in a minute, but let's make this, because that's super, what's the right word? It's very bespoke. It's very customized information that you're pulling from somebody and feeding back to them so that they can make, sometimes significant, sometimes marginal gains. But let's go broad stroke for just a minute. How do you answer when people say, what should I be eating?
Well, and if I have the nutritional blood test,
no,
I could.
No, you don't.
That's the problem.
Right.
And so then I go, okay, what do I see on average? There's a whole lot of processing that has to go on when I'm looking at this person and just trying to try fill in the blanks of what I don't know about them to enter those territories that are on my kind of spreadsheet of, okay, I need these data points before I'm going to tell someone anything.
Okay, let's say you don't have that information and you were to make blanket recommendations for people on how nutrition, how they can be better at fueling their body?
I mean, for, I guess for the average person, that's just a thing where, you know, if you're eating at any of the fast food joints, that's not a good sign. I think a lot of people are focused on avoiding carbohydrates, and that's a terrible call. In the sports world, that does not work. And I know just for kind of, I have a split on this one ethically, but as far as eating meat versus being a vegetarian or a vegan, personally, I'm pretty close to vegetarian. I'll have fish once in a while just because I need some of the fatty acids, and if I don't get them there, my blood test looks horrible. But if I look at other people, and I'd say probably five times a day, I'm telling somebody to eat meat. And it's a thing where I'm leaving the ethics up to them as far as what they want to do with that and not putting my own stamp on there. But I think for the average person, meat is a benefit, which is coming from a vegetarian. So that's you know, not something that you hear very often.
You know, I think I know this, but I want to be super clear. Why are you a vegetarian?
I just don't want to end up killing an animal for no reason. If I could, you know, if someone gave me a choice of here's a cow, go kill it and eat it, or get some milk from it and make some cheese, I'd rather make cheese and have a grilled cheese sandwich than go kill the animal. So it's just, I feel bad for the animal, and that's really it.
So you want a compassionate eating, compassionate consumption. Yeah. And since I've known you, this has been the case. So how long have you been a vegetarian?
Conversation first started in college. One of my friends was a vegan, and we got into a discussion about it because I was seeing no evidence that being a vegan was healthier than being a meat eater. And I don't know, I guess it raised some awareness of, well, you know, if you go to McDonald's and get a hamburger, you've actually killed an animal. It's, you know, which I hadn't processed that before.
Okay, so how long are we talking?
Like 30 years.
Yeah. Like that. And let's spread some knowledge, if you will. And I want to know this myself. I think, you know, I was a vegan for like 6-7 years.
I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't? Mm-mm. Yeah. My wife and I were vegan for a long time in college for compassionate eating. And this was before Whole Foods. This was before, like, so same with you. It was hard back then. And I think I was less healthy then than I was after I stopped eating meat, because I wasn't doing it correctly. Now, I educated myself as best as I possibly could, and I wasn't eating McDonald's fries and bun, you know, like as a vegetarian diet, but it was hard. And so I'd love for you to drop some insights on what people could do to become more plant-based.
Well, that's a hard one to answer, only because the 10 worst blood tests I've ever seen, I'd say 9 out of those 10 were vegans. And that's out of more than 5,000 tests. And so in general, I find that vegans have some horrible deficiencies that are affecting their health, their mental well-being. There's just a huge number of things.
Can you be super concrete on, not those 5, but like the general problems that vegans run into? And let's just do vegan and vegetarian are different, right? So vegan is like zero animal products at all.
Exactly.
Right? And that means leather on shoes, leather in cars, if you're really doing it. And then, but no cheese, no dairy, nothing, certainly no muscle.
Yeah. And so for vegans, the first thing that comes to mind is vitamin B12, because it's just, you're not going to get it if you aren't eating some meat.
Okay. So then, so somebody says, okay, great. Well, I'm going to be a vegan and take vitamin B12 supplements.
Well, and then there's a handful of amino acids that I see come back really low when people are vegan. So that, you know, the protein side of things, you know, there's a older kind of school of thought with complementing proteins that I actually think makes some sense if someone's going to be an athlete and try to be vegan.
That there are some benefits.
Yeah. So
because?
Well, just because you're going to end up with some amino acids that you come back very, very low in. You know, and a lot of those have to do with production of dopamine and other important,
Okay, hold on. Let's do this for a moment. Amino acids are the precursors for protein.
They're components of it.
Components of it. Okay. So building blocks is, do I have that wrong?
Good name.
Okay. So they're building blocks of protein. Many people will say, I need X percent fat, X percent carbs, and X percent protein for a healthy performance-based diet, whether you're an athlete or non-athlete. And you're saying, okay, people that are vegan have problems with building the, developing or consuming the building blocks for protein.
They end up with an imbalance there. And they'll end up with some amino acids that they just are not getting enough of. I think it's also because when someone's vegan, they kind of settle into, oh, these are things that I can cook. And it becomes a little less flexible. And they probably eat the same things over and over and over again, which I don't know if that happened when you were doing it.
But it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it still does now. You know, I still find myself with two regular patterns. I think probably most people do. Yeah. Do you remember when I was on that kick for a while, when I would go to a restaurant, like a nice restaurant, and nice has lots of different variations, right? But I would go to a health-based restaurant, and I would just ask the waiter or waitress to pick whatever for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a test in a lot of different ways, but yeah. You don't recommend that.
Leaving it up to the server to pick. No, I don't think that's a good plan.
It always came back with steak and lobster. I don't understand. Okay. Yeah. Keep going on the vegetarian vegan piece.
Okay. I think with the vegan side of things, you know, if someone was to include dairy products, it becomes a heck of a lot easier to work around that. Is still some omega-3s that I just find that people end up deficient in, which, you know, for me, it's one of those things where I will eat fish on occasion. It's intentional. It's a thing where I've kind of thought it through and, okay, I need a piece of salmon or something in order to get enough omega-3s.
Because you omega-3s are essential fatty acid, meaning you have to consume it. Your body doesn't make it. So do you supplement it as well?
Well, and that would be a territory where if I wasn't eating salmon, I would probably take a fish oil supplement.
Almost every blood test that you and I have done together, where you're leading it, but I'm sitting in learning, is that it seems like all, I don't know, is this too big of a number? 80% are deficient in omegas?
Well, the issue there is that I'm going to kind of go way off into the deep end of science part here, but
take us there.
So alpha linolenic acid should be able to be made into other omega-3s.
You said alpha linolenic acid.
Alpha linolenic acid.
Alpha linolenic acid.
And so you should be able to make some of the other omega-3s from that. The problem is the rate that those are made at doesn't necessarily keep up with the demand for what an athlete's going to need. One of the things it would turn into is this stuff called eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA. You'll see that on a fish oil bottle. That reduces inflammation. It's kind of from a health point of view, lowers blood pressure.
It's part of the gold dust of omegas.
Yeah, yeah. And same with DHA, this docosahexaenoic acid. That would be in something like fish oil as well. So alpha-linolenic acid that you would get from nuts and seeds should be able to be turned into those things. But in vegans, I just find that especially vegan athletes, the rate that they can produce those things is not sufficient to keep up with the demand.
If somebody were to come in and say, I'm already really good at what I do, athlete, non-athlete, musician, entrepreneur, executive, and I want to like maximize my fuel, my nutritional side of things. Would you recommend vegetarian or plant-based diet? Or would you say there's other, based on your philosophy, we can get there, whether it's meat and potatoes on a regular basis or meat and avocados, right? Or would you push people or recommend people become more vegetarian or plant-based?
On an ethical level, I think that's a much better place to be. On a physiological level, I'm going to go in a totally different direction and say that some of the people that I see come back with the best blood tests are people who are eating steak, especially grass-fed beef. You know, if I'm picking the things that a human would do best with, if they're going to try to maximize performance, it's going to be a diet that has red meat in it.
Okay, so let's say somebody says, gotcha, but philosophically, I'm done eating animals. And I want to be sharp. I want to be switched on. I want my energy high, stable. I want my mood regulated. I want to recover in a world-class way because I'm trying to get after it in life. And I don't want to eat animals or animal byproducts. What do we need to know?
Well, one of the things that I'm just going to throw out some things that I've witnessed over the years. Carnitine. So carnitine is an amino acid that you can produce in small quantities. You need it to use fat as a fuel source. Carne is meat. Carnitine was first found in meat. If someone's eating a vegan diet, even vegetarian diet, getting enough carnitine for someone who's training hard can prove to be difficult.
What if their training is thinking hard and they're moving 5 hours a week in and out of a gym? You know, they're doing, let's say, moderate exercise. They're not an athlete. They're doing moderate exercise. They're in shape or trying to get in shape, and they sit and think a lot. Would you say they still need carnitine or L-carnitine as a supplement?
That's probably not going to be as much of a factor. At least, again, coming from the background of thousands of athlete blood tests, but much fewer on the normal population. With normal people, when I've seen blood tests on them, they don't show that same carnitine deficiency that an athlete would that if they were training really hard.
Okay, good insight. Okay, so vegetarians for athletes, you're saying you got to figure out carnitine.
Yeah.
Vegetarian for non-athletes, but people that are exercising moderately, it might not pop.
Yeah.
Okay. What amounts of proteins? Well, we're doing macro for a minute. What amounts of proteins does the average 150 pounder male or 100? I don't know what averages are, but 180 pound male and a 120 pound woman. I have no idea what averages are. Really? Do you?
Yeah. Well, and it's usually off of their lean body mass that I'm coming up with the number. So it's not just off their body weight. So if someone knows their body fat, if you take that off of your total body weight.
Okay. Do that again for us. If you can figure out your body fat, you get an
index. So if you know your body fat
percentage.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I am 50% body fat, I know that's not.
Yeah. Just for doing some simple math. If you were 200 pounds and 50% body fat, whatever that number is that after you subtract out the body fat, that's usually kind of where I'm starting to make the calculation. So if someone is...
And that's tissue. Now we're talking about bones and heart and muscle
what's left.
And tissue, right? Yeah. Okay, so based on this math, we're down to 100 pounds of lean tissue.
Which would be a very strange person, but... as far as calculations go... It's going to fall between 0.7 grams of protein per pound of lean body mass and 1 gram of protein. Somewhere in that territory is going to be ideal.
For elite athletes, did you say that? Or is that for the average person?
This is just, I would say the lower end of that spectrum would be something that the average person could apply. For elite athletes, I don't see any need to go above 1 gram of protein per pound of lean body mass.
Okay, got it. All right. Okay, good marker. I mean, but you think about some athletes that are... 180 pounds of lean tissue. That's a large human being, right? 180 pounds of lean body mass. And you're saying you need 180 grams of protein per day. You can only break down 30 grams per X number of hours, something like that?
Yeah. As far as processing protein, what I'll see happen is if someone eats too few meals per day, that the ability to process that, it just isn't... able to keep up with the demand. And so somewhere between 30 and 40 grams of protein, I think depending on the size of the person, that would be a reasonable target per meal to get in.
And then is 30 to 40 grams of protein. Is that about, if I'm cupping my hand right now and I'm imagining a chicken breast in there, is that about the right size?
Yeah. So most meat products are going to be 7 grams of protein per ounce of meat. So if it's, a 4 ounce chicken breast, you're looking at 28 grams of protein, somewhere in that area.
And what does 4 ounces look like of a chicken breast?
I mean,
that would
just be a small chicken breast.
Small chicken breast. Okay. Yeah. And then a normal filet that if you were to go out and eat somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, you see 6 ounce, 8 ounce, whatever. A lot of those are more than what you need. But you also have to take into account if someone's going to cut the fat off of it and, other things, you're going to have less than what
Okay. Super, super granular here, but really, I think, effective stuff. Okay. Finding Mastery is brought to you by Aura Frames. Mother's Day, it's right around the corner. And I think I've got something special that you might love gifting your mom. Aura Frames are beautiful. They're Wi-Fi connected. They're digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's awesome what they've done. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. It only takes a few minutes to set up. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories, and it makes the whole thing come alive when they open it up. We got one from my mother-in-law a few years ago, and it was a home run. It looks great in her house, and she loves it every time she looks at it. The picture is of a different moment. Aura Frames was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things, and for good reason. They've done a really nice job with this product. So if you're looking for a unique gift this year that will bring just a little extra joy to your mothers and grandmothers or aunts or friends, I want to encourage you to go check out Aura Frames. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Because you're a Finding Mastery listener, you can save on this incredible gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. So the way you spell it, Aura, A-U-R-A, auraframes.com, and then make sure to use the code Finding Mastery at checkout to have the $30 savings. Terms and conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by the Tim Ferriss Show podcast. So this month, the Tim Ferriss Show will be celebrating its 10-year anniversary. I mean, 10 years. He's really poured into his podcast. It's a show of honest learning, one that drills into the insights and practices of people that he's fascinated by so that he and we can become better at what we love doing, whether that's in business, the arts, sport, and or lifestyle in general. Tim has set the standard now. He leads from the front authentically. He has helped so many people through his podcast, including me. I want to take a moment here to celebrate his amazing body of work. He spent time with legends like Dr. Jane Goodall, Jamie Foxx, LeBron James, Matthew McConaughey, Mark Zuckerberg, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and hundreds more. I mean, it's an absolute all-star list. And in doing so, he's passed 1 billion downloads. It's amazing. I was also fortunate to be on his show back in 2017 as part of Tim's Fearless series. It was awesome. He was really well prepared, and he earnestly had questions about the how that sits underneath my approach as a sports psychologist working with world-class performers. Outside of his podcast, Tim has been listed as one of Fast Company's most innovative business people and is the author of 5 number one New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestsellers, including The 4-Hour Workweek and Tools of Titans. Congrats, Tim. You can find The Tim Ferriss Show wherever you get your podcasts, and you can learn more about the podcast as well as 5 Bullet Friday, Tim's newsletter that has nearly 2 million weekly subscribers at tim.blog. That's tim.blog. How, if you're a vegetarian, plant-based, how are you going to get enough protein?
Well, and you find protein in everything. I mean, it's not that it's hard to find. So beans have a bunch of protein. The problem is if you just ate beans, you're missing some really key amino acids and you're going to end up with deficiencies. If you complement beans with grains, well, now you've got some other amino acids coming in that would make up the deficiencies.
What type of grains are you a fan of?
Well, so if someone wants to work in quinoa, that works great. I know a lot of people are on a gluten-free kick right now, and I honestly don't find that most people have an issue with gluten. There are exceptions, and when someone does have an issue with it and you pull it out, it's nothing short of incredible as far as the difference it can make for that person. But for the average person, I think they probably cause more trouble by going gluten-free.
And then I think your test picks up gluten sensitivities, right? Yeah, of course it does, right? Okay. Okay, and then, okay, good. And then maybe we can switch to carbs for just a minute, carbs and fats. I think it seems to me, I don't know why, easier to think about those two variables.
Yeah, so with the carbs, for athletes, keeping enough carbs coming in can prove to be difficult. I'd say that's probably the hardest part of the whole thing is keeping enough fuel coming in from a carb pathway.
Because they're burning at such a high efficiency rate, and the output is so high.
The training sessions are just long. There's a lot of carbs burned in it, and if you don't replenish them, you're going to, that's usually why a lot of athletes have to take a day off, is just to recover.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a story right now. It was a Red Bull project that we worked on, and you made the recommendation. This was an ultra event. Do you know where I'm going with this? And you made the recommendation, like, he's just got to eat Pop-Tarts. Which is like, I know that that's out of left field right now, but that is like, that's what I would have expected from you being a plant-based, you're not plant-based, but like really understanding the science of food, and that you're suggesting like this junk, but that was all...
I think it was also trying to find something that would pack in a lot of carbs and not weigh a whole lot and take up a whole lot of space. And, you know, so that was a simple way to do it. I don't know that I've ever suggested that to anybody else.
Right, I know. And I think also one of the variables was he was like, you know, when you exercise a lot, so this is an ultra issue or even any of us that exercise a lot. I don't want to eat right after. I definitely don't want to eat while I'm running or doing like any sort of strain. And he was having to eat while he was straining, you definitely don't want to eat a steak. You definitely don't want to eat chicken. You definitely don't want to eat you could do nuts, but like beans. And you're like, okay, we got to get some carbs in, get some sugar in. This is a way to get some sugar in because he's going to bonk.
Yeah. And sometimes with nutrition, you know, athletes are really picky eaters. There's some people that you have to just get really creative in how you're going to get something in. And it may not be what would be considered healthy by other people's standard. But if you're just looking at, hey, this person's got to perform on Sunday, and how are we going to do this? And
yeah, okay. Okay, so go carbs for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, just talk carbs in general.
I think that for a lot of people, when they cut carbs, they will drop weight, so they automatically think carbs are bad. But it's just because when carbs are stored in your, let's say, in muscle, they hold on to a little bit of water, so water weighs a fair amount, and... You know, if you stop having carbs and your muscles are holding on to less glycogen, that would be stored carbs, you're going to weigh less, but that isn't that you lost fat. It's just you're holding on to less water.
And you have less available energy.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. When you say carbs, I think many people are thinking pasta, bread, potatoes. Are you talking about carbs including that? Because I know that part of your brain is saying, no, cauliflower, spinach, broccoli.
Not really, because cauliflower, spinach, and broccoli, they do have some carbs, but it's not a huge amount. I'd rather see someone be eating those things because they need other nutrients. The carbohydrate content really isn't substantial.
So where do we get carbs? What's the right
blend? My favorite sources would be sweet potatoes. If someone's okay with that, that works terrific. Even regular potatoes aren't terrible. The quinoa I mentioned before would be good. And I don't have
a problem if you get a fish plate, right, at a nice restaurant and it's not grilled in a bunch of butter or whatever, and it's a proper preparation for fish, and you like oils, I want to come back to cooking with oils in a minute, but would you recommend that I get a sweet potato versus seasonal vegetables? Mix them up?
Both. Yeah.
Mix them up like one day this, one day that.
Even in one meal, because the problem with sweet potatoes is people tend to eat a sweet potato, and that's a lot of carbs. And so if it's a quarter of a sweet potato for the average person, that's probably enough carbs. But then you throw in some veggies on top of that, now you've got a nice meal.
Okay, so my wife and I should split. One get one and one get the other. Yeah. And then, okay, there you go. And then of course, on the sweet potato, we want to make sure we get sour cream, butter. No. Okay. Yeah. All right. And then, so let's talk about, okay, keep going on some carbs that are good. You like the quinoa, you like the sweet potatoes.
Yeah. On the fruit side of things, I don't have a problem with someone having some fruit. I think again, when you start going to extremes in that territory and someone is going crazy and juicing everything and having a ton of sugars, that's not good.
And you've taught me berries more than melons.
Yeah, and again, the glycemic index of the food is going to matter. The glycemic index just being how high your blood sugar is going to respond or move in response to that meal.
Okay, I want to pull out for just a moment and do I've come to know you as a thoughtful moderate. And you said earlier, no, it's about being extreme, the min-max model. But when I learn from you and I think about you, this is weird, but I think about you when I make nutritional choices. Is that weird?
Okay.
Not like that. No, but I do. You've guided me in so many ways from the blood tests that I've done over the years with you and being around elite performers. in as many different domains as you and I think would both say we're privileged to work in, that when I make decisions, I'm thinking that you're saying to me, hey, that's okay. You can choose that, but make sure you also choose this. Like, but I don't ever hear you saying in the back of my mind, you know, eat chocolate cake. And I know you like chocolate cake, you know, or eat cereal, because I've never heard of any of that packaged stuff that you would recommend. But if we're going to eat general foods, like you feel like you're more of a moderate to me.
This is another thing that's going to sound weird, but I would say extreme moderation, because putting the effort into for an athlete, again, kind of going into that territory, because they do need to get in carbs, healthy fats, protein, all those things, you want to make sure that they're getting a large variety of things in, and it's just kind of giving them a palette to pick from of, okay, here's what you have to work with. They could go out and eat at someplace like Cheesecake Factory and actually make good choices and not leave there having messed everything up.
So Cheesecake in particular, that type of restaurant is not cooking in butter and
well, you could go in there and walk out eating a totally healthy meal. That would not be a problem. It's just the temptation to do other things is there, and someone needs to avoid that temptation.
Where are you about pasta, white pasta?
Once in a while, it's not going to be a problem.
Not every meal, not every day.
No, that wouldn't be ideal.
Okay, but, all right. Yeah, of course, right? And I think people know that, but then it's like, and when you go to a restaurant, you want to enjoy the experience and maybe, you know, not necessarily eat raw something. And where are you on salads?
Salad's great.
Yeah, you like
that's
salad.
One of those things where as far as mixing in, you know, if you're picking the kind of school of thought with try to put a large number of colors on your plate, that's probably a good rule of thumb.
Yeah, I've learned that from you. Like the training that I'll talk to some folks about is the big part is recovery. And I want to put a pin in that for you, because I learned that statement from you and it's been really valuable. Like, fill your plate with color, and M&Ms and Skittles are not part of the color. Yeah. Okay. So I want to put a pin in recovery for just a minute and then get over to the fats. And then do one step up and do like basic recommendations of percentages. But I'm imagining when you say fats, you're going to say nuts and avocados and that type of fat.
Yeah, not necessarily. You know, I don't, again, have a problem with someone having a little bit of butter on something. You know, there used to be a school of thought that saturated fats were a huge problem from a health perspective. And that's largely been dispelled. You know, for an athlete, I don't have any issue with them having some butter on things.
Okay.
Even animal fat, if they're having
cooked
a steak.
Cooked in butter or butter on?
I mean, obviously, again, extreme moderation here, where there is a moderate amount of butter where this is going to be okay, but not, you know, sitting in a dish of melted butter.
Okay, so what are the other fats that you recommend?
Nuts and seeds are great. Like I was saying earlier, with probably five times a day, I'm saying have some red meat. It's usually pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, chia seeds. You know, as far as the fats that are in there, in addition to magnesium and vitamin E and other other things, I find that I'm using those pretty often.
And then, what is the right amount per, I don't know how to do this, like 100 pounds person? I don't know how to ask you about amounts, because
asking
really
about amounts. It varies by the size of the person.
Yeah.
I mean, a smaller person's going to need less of those things. You know, if someone's looking at the center of their palm, that's usually, you know, if you have a good size pinch of sesame seeds, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, any of those, that's a reasonable amount to have. It doesn't take a crazy amount to per day to get a good variety of fats in.
And you've also taught me the value of coconut oil.
Okay.
Or like high heat oils.
Yeah. And with the oil side of things, when I have nutritional blood tests on someone, that's really easy to dial in. But
because you look at the oleic acid.
I just look at some values and go, okay, well, this would be the ideal oil for you to use. It's funny how everyone's like bashing on one oil or another, but you know, they're saying grapeseed oil is great and coconut oil is bad and all these other things. And it really depends on the person. My suggestion would be to mix it up and not just use one thing over and over and over again.
So, and but you are a fan of high heat oils.
For cooking purposes, absolutely.
Yeah.
If someone takes a low temperature, like olive oil is horrible for cooking. And a lot of people use it. A lot of restaurants use it. And, you know, if you start cranking the heat past medium, you end up causing a fair amount of damage to that particular oil.
And what happens when the oil damages?
Well, there's a whole lot of research being done on whether it becomes carcinogenic. There's a lot of negative consequence on the health side of things when you overcook an oil.
So if my pan is getting so hot with oil in it that it's smoking,
That's not a good sign.
Okay. Bad. All right. Good. And then do general recommendations for general percentages of each of those macronutrients.
Boy, that's again, like with my own mom asking me what she should eat for breakfast. It's a thing where because I'm dealing in really specific territory, it's harder to come back to just general information. You know, the zone diet 40-30-30 type of thing. I mean, that is not terribly far off from what I see work pretty well. I think there's probably
that's
more
40
carbs, 30% protein, 30% fat.
Yeah.
I would say that you could probably get away with having a little less on the protein and maybe a little less on the fat and bump that into carbs, and that would be very reasonable.
Why is this so hard? Why are we as humans having, and I know you can point to the Industrial Revolution in the manufacturing of food and the cost that's being stripped out, the nutrient cost that's being stripped out, but why is this so hard?
I don't think it's that it's that hard. It's just if someone's trying to be optimal, that's different than someone that's just trying to survive.
Cool. Yeah, reframe. Yeah, because I do see many world performers that are, they think a lot about nutrition and trying to get it right. So it begs the question, what is the ratio between the right nutrition being the proper fuel for going and being able to do hard things as opposed to the proper recovery module for being able to recover from the hard things that you've just done?
Well, you need both of those.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It would depend if it's an event where it's a tournament of some kind where, you know, they're going to have to do the same thing the next day, volleyball, tennis, any of those things where you have to perform the same or better the next day because your competition has gotten tougher. That's really tough to, and again, carbs are super hard to get in a short period of time to refuel completely before that next event. So recovery would be at the top of the list for that type of a sport. You know, for something like a Olympic athlete that's just competing in one sport, you've just got to peak for that one thing. You don't have to do it again the next day. You know, that may be a very different application for it.
How about for the rest of us, which are wanting to think clearly and have great energy and are training or doing some sort of fitness work, 5-6 hours a week. And some of it's strenuous and it's not terribly taxing. It's interval training, let's say. But we want to think clearly. We want to have great energy. You know, like, walk us through that.
Yeah, and I think for that person, it makes sense to trim the carbs back a little bit if we're looking at, you know, well, okay, what's this person going to be healthiest with? I'm not saying to eliminate carbs by any means, but this is a thing where you're not going to need to be toward the high end of that, where you're trying to get the carbs in at every single meal to replenish your stores. I think the average person doesn't eat frequently enough. And I know there's whole schools of thoughts on intermittent fasting and other things that are kind of becoming trendy. But if you're just looking at brain function, your brain's going to run on sugar. I mean, that's really what it takes to run. And I know, you know, when you were talking about the Pop-Tarts, I know in college there was a situation where I had some big tests coming up and I was thinking, what am I going to do to make sure my brain is functioning through the whole thing? And it was down a couple of Pop-Tarts before any major strenuous thinking that I was going to have to do for a long period of time.
How long would that last for you?
That's the thing. And it's only going to give you about an hour of higher level functioning. So it's not going to work for someone that's just trying to do this on a day in and day out basis.
And that's because of the insulin spike and the crash that takes place afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay. But that, so Pop-Tarts will last about an hour?
Yeah.
Or any sort of simple sugar?
I certainly don't want to advertise Pop-Tarts.
No. Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. Is there any hack? and you know my position on hacking, but is there any hack to optimize nutrition?
On my end, that's, you know, I'm looking at so many, you know, there's more than 200 variables in that test that I'm taking into account. And so it's a huge amount of information that if we're getting those little tiny percents off of each thing, that adds up to being a hack, because now you've found a way to optimize this person's performance.
So when I appreciate how you're looking at it, because I have an aversion to that, as you know, that there's no shortcuts, and that, you know, you've just got to really go the distance to be able to really figure out the most efficient way for you. And sometimes that involves the distance of spending time on a nutritional test or a psychological assessment or whatever. And then you got to do the work after.
Well, that's the thing, is this is not a simple hack. It's a thing where you get the information, but then applying that and actually working it into your lifestyle is that's on the person that I just reviewed the test with. It's one of those things where some people get the information and they're like, wow, I need a lot of things. And then they don't do anything about it. And, you know, what have you done? You've just wasted a bunch of money on a test and there's no purpose to it.
Finding Mastery is brought to you by Hydro. If you're trying to live the full life, one where your heart swells with passion, with love for being connected, whether that's as a parent or with passion projects or whatever your thing may be, being physically healthy is important to all of us. And one of my go-tos to do that is my Hydro rower. Hydro is awesome. They make premium smart rowing machines that offer tons of interactive and challenging workouts. I've had a Hydro for the last few years, and it's been an incredible addition to my fitness and movement routine. It's a go-to for me for low-impact, full-body workouts. I feel great after a Hydro workout. And with so many other things going on in my life, I really appreciate the efficiency that it offers. And they've done an excellent job with this product. It feels great. It looks great. It was founded and thoughtfully designed by rowers. They use an electromagnet drag technology to make it feel like you're really gliding on water. Super quiet, which is perfect for an at-home machine. The classes are led by Olympians and world-class athletes. And what's really cool is that they film their workouts all over the world, outside, on the water. So you're not stuck in this some studio and just watching someone inspired row. It's what they've done all around, full up, is awesome. My favorite instructor is Mac. She's great. I really want to encourage you to give it a shot. And Hydro has you covered with free standard shipping, a 30-day risk-free trial, and one-year warranty. This spring, join the growing rowing community at Hydro. Head over to hydro.com and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400 off your Hydro. That's hydro.com, HYDROW.com, and use the code MASTERY to save up to $400. Hydro.com, use the code MASTERY. Finding Mastery is brought to you by UCAN. One important way to take control of your metabolic fitness is to fuel with foods that help regulate your blood sugar. It's key for your metabolism to work effectively and to maintain sustainable energy levels. So many sports drinks and energy products are filled with sugar or fast-digesting carbs. And while those give you a quick flash of energy, it ends up being short-lived and can lead to a crash. UCAN has taken a different approach, and that's why they're loved by so many elite athletes that I know. Their products deliver a sustained release of long-lasting energy that helps you maintain sharper focus, curb hunger cravings, to help you exercise harder without spiking blood sugar. They've developed a patent low-glycemic carbohydrate called Live Steady. It's derived from a complex starch instead of sugar, and its efficacy is backed by extensive research and clinical trials, which I know you love. A few members of the team here at Finding Mastery use UCAN on a regular basis while preparing for marathons and other endurance events, and they've loved it too. They say it's a game changer in their training and performance. Whether you're an intense exerciser or recreationally active or just looking for an energy boost to get you through the day, I hope that you'll consider checking out UCAN as a smarter way to fuel. You can try a variety of UCAN products for free when you head to ucan.co/findingmastery. You just pay for shipping. They'll cover the rest. Again, that's UCAN, spelt UCAN.co/findingmastery to try a selection of UCAN products for free. What percentage of people stick with it? They take the information, and then change their behavior?
I think a lot of people do. It's one of those things where sometimes you get no feedback and you don't know whether that person actually took what you said and applied it or not. And then 2 years later, you run into them and they said, oh yeah, I'm still doing exactly what you told me to do. And they look great and they're feeling good and you just never heard anything. So,
Is there something that you've learned to help people sustain that behavior that they want to make? That's why they spent the money to come see you?
I've learned not to use big words in the conversation.
Because?
It's a lot of information. The review normally takes about an hour and a half to go through. And even if I'm dealing with someone that has a scientific background, if you start throwing around icosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid, and these things that are, you know, it takes me a minute.
I got one of those too, phosphatidylserine.
Well, yeah.
I'm joking. Yeah, right. Yeah, but it's like, what?
There's a amount of energy required to process that. And even for me, if I'm holding that conversation, if they're using the full name of things, it requires energy, and you're going to lose them in a very short period of time.
So make it simple.
Yep. And okay. I keep it, okay, line 32, this is something that you need to produce testosterone. You're missing this nutrient. Here are the 10 foods that you would find it in. Can we work those in?
Great. All right. Most people listening would benefit from, and this is male or female, I think, but let's just say men for a moment, would benefit, not most people, that's way too simple, but there's a healthy amount of people that would say, hey, I'm getting a little bit older. I'm producing less testosterone naturally. And I bet if I took that blood test with Chris Talley that I'd benefit from some more testosterone. So teach us.
Yeah. So if you look historically at testosterone, and this is a pretty complex territory, but you know, going into, let's say, the 1970s, 1980s, the ability to measure testosterone is the same as it is now. So you're not going to see a huge variance of the methodology used. But when you were taking those people who, let's say, were born in the early 1900s, so let's say someone born in 1910, and now in 1980, they're 70 years old. If you look at their testosterone at that 70-year-old mark, and you compare that to nowadays, to a person that's 35 or 40 years old, their testosterone is about the same. And so to have a 70 or even 80-year-old, some of these people, you know, they've done studies on, coming back with testosterone scores similar to people half that age now, and testosterone declines with age. So the question is, well, what's happening in modern society where we're seeing that decline? And decade after decade, there was a nice study that came out a few years back where they actually charted all of that, and you'll see a nice looking graph as far as, you know, they plot the people born in the early 1900s versus the 1920s, the 1940s, and so on, and it's just getting worse and worse. And so is it due to pesticides and other things that are in the environment, other pollutants, other things that are interfering with production of it, or is it, let's say, the soil is getting stripped of certain nutrients that you need, and now you aren't getting as much as someone did, you know, in the early 1900s. But that's a really fascinating territory. And for athletes, I see a lot of athletes that come back with the testosterone score in the 300s and 400s, which for a man is very low.
What is the range for a, you know, 30 to 40 to 50-year-old male?
Well, and I think the range where people feel good would be for men would be in the 500 to 600 area.
Is that independent of age? That's not right.
No, it would. It would be a thing where that's where you're going to feel good.
Okay,
and I'm not suggesting
500?
Testosterone supplementation. No, that's a whole other.
Yeah, thing. And you're really clear about that.
Yeah, so that even for people that are non-athletes that can get it, I find there's always something missing that's preventing that person from producing testosterone at the level that they should be. On the exercise front, you'd certainly see a bump in testosterone if someone was to work out at a higher intensity.
And that's why you recommend interval training as a general frame?
Yeah, that seems to work better for them.
And is that because, I think I might be butchering this, so I want to run it by you and see, is that I think and I can't remember if you told me, I read it somewhere, I made it up maybe, sometimes I wonder, but I tell me if this is right or close to right, is that when you do something at high intensity, whether that's lifting weight or a cardio strain at an appropriate high intensity for you, that something happens in your brain and it says, whoa, we're straining, we're stressing. We need to make sure that we keep up from a neurochemical standpoint and produce things such as testosterone and growth hormone to keep up with this demand. And so it triggers something in your system to say, hey, start releasing and doing better in these two areas.
Yeah, so that it seems like that happens at somewhere between 70 and 80% of what you could do for one repetition. So if someone was just looking at doing an explosive movement, a vertical jump or something of that type, you know, if you're doing something where you're above that 70% of what you could do that one time, that seems to be the territory where you're going to produce the most testosterone. Or let's say I'm just going to use weight training as an example. If someone could squat 100 pounds.
Or bench press or something.
Yeah. And so let's say for a training weight, you use 70 or 80 pounds. That would be a reasonable kind of entry into that territory where you're not going to hurt yourself and you would be able to produce more testosterone.
Okay, brilliant. And do I have it close that it starts to, things in the brain start to get triggered to say, hey, you've got to do something to be stronger, dude.
Yeah. And that's a pretty complicated territory. I know, for me, it's outside of my realm, but it is one of those things where I get to see what happens when someone does train at this level. And so I'm seeing the testosterone results on their blood test. I know what their trainer has been doing and I see what's working and what isn't working.
Okay. From a nutritional standpoint, how do we get better at testosterone? As well, let's do that because I also want to get to growth hormone in a minute as well. But definitely sleep. I don't know if you're going to bring that in, but I just want to bring that in now. That sleep in the fifth cycle, longer REM sleep, like getting that right actually helps with the production of testosterone.
Absolutely. That's a huge part of it. Sleep quality more so than anything else. I know some people just go, oh, well, I sleep 8 hours, I'm fine. And there's a big difference between sleeping for 8 hours and even 6 hours of super high quality sleep. A lot of times that comes back as a nutritional issue. When you're talking about tryptophan that everyone hears about at Thanksgiving and they think the tryptophan and the turkey knocked them out, it's not so much that it would knock someone out, it's just tryptophan is required to go into deep sleep. And there are certain amino acids that compete with tryptophan at the blood-brain barrier.
Which are?
So leucine, isoleucine, valine, tyrosine, phenylalanine.
Too much of those would suppress the production.
It would be the transport mechanisms can only move one amino acid at a time. If there's a bunch of those other things relative to the tryptophan, you've now made it that you're not going to get as much tryptophan into your brain. And, you know, there's going to be some consequences of that.
Right. And tryptophan is the precursor to our friend
serotonin.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're not producing the transporters of tryptophan, then you're not going to fall asleep well, but you're also not going to be able to produce enough serotonin to have balanced energy and mood throughout the day.
Absolutely. And on that front, if you look at the cascade of events that in the production of serotonin, I'm not measuring serotonin or dopamine or epinephrine or any of these things on the test. I'm looking at the metabolic byproducts of metabolism of those things.
And
those
just byproducts or precursors? I think it's both.
The byproducts.
It's not precursors?
Well, in the case of tryptophan or tyrosine or those type of things, those would be things that would be used to make these.
So tryptophan and tyrosine are the precursors to serotonin and dopamine, respectively.
Yeah.
And so what I hear you saying is that you're looking at the waste.
Well, you need to look at something that isn't transient. And when you're dealing with dopamine and serotonin, it's going to flash all over the place and you can't get an accurate read on that and use that for anything therapeutic. If you're looking at, there's this stuff called vanyl mandylate that would be something that would indicate epinephrine and norepinephrine metabolism. Homovanillate would be for dopamine. 5-hydroxyindolacetate. I'm probably going to lose people naming off these big names, but
no, these are good.
These are things that
because you can measure. That's the point. You can measure these. And okay, so speaking directly to the audience for just a moment, I've never said audience. It's our friends that are listening. is that this is where the suggestion that I'm going to make to everyone that I work with is that there's three steps to optimize nutrition. The first step is to, and Chris, tell me if I'm wrong on these.
Okay.
The first step is to get some education, but that's not enough. The second step is education with some behavioral change, and that education behavioral change can be customized to you. a la blood work. So that's where I recommend folks get connected with you or people like you. But, you know, I don't want to flood you with people from this podcast, but I think that is going to happen. And then the third is customized meal planning, where, and this is what I walk through every elite athlete or executive, whatever, that if you only want to start in the first phase, no problem. Go meet with your local nutritionist and get some basic frames. The second is get the blood work. So it's about you and your needs. And then the third is have somebody make that food for you. And because I think it's hard for people to make the food, to get all the right stuff in, where optimized kitchens with the blood work can create that pathway. Does that sound close to being right?
That sounds like a reasonable path. I know on the nutritional blood testing side of it, it's a thing where I'm pretty much, you know, nearing capacity. So it's not that I'm looking to generate business. There's other people in that field. The concern that I have there is, if I'm looking for just a suggestion for what to give people, would be look for someone who's got a lot of experience in that territory and not just some, you know, because a lot of doctors will run tests and they're just going off the summary section that the lab puts together. They just have an algorithm of, hey, here's what this person's deficient in, give them these supplements. You know, they don't even discuss food. They're just trying to pump supplements into somebody. And that's really disturbing when, you know, for me, those pages of the test with the summary, I pretty much discard because it's so far off of what my experience has been there.
Okay. So if you were to be as bold to say, if you're a human, my recommendation for nutrition is, what would you do? What would you say?
I'd probably have to start with eating clean first, as far as just avoiding all the pesticides and the things that, you know, that would take a whole other side of things out of the picture that would be a concern. It wouldn't be so much on the food side of it, but I would say if someone is just looking to have more benefit from the testosterone that they do have, lowering sex hormone binding globulin would be a big benefit. That's something that wraps up testosterone. And if someone has a high score on that, you're basically going to have less free testosterone. You're going to feel less of that benefit from it. And that's one where I think there's not enough effort being put in on a team. And, you know, let's say with the sports teams, I'll leave the team nameless, but one of the NFL teams, everyone on the team came back with a high sex hormone binding globulin score. And I told the team that this is something you guys are doing. This is not the players, because everyone's got it. And so sure enough, we went through, and it was the body wash, the shampoo, the conditioner, the soap at the sink, even the massage lotion they were using to do the massage work on the players, was loaded full of parabens and phthalates, which is something that would drive up that score. And so you've got an NFL team where the entire team has less free testosterone because of some products in the locker room. And that's a super simple fix from a team perspective. And the team ended up well exceeding their expectations that season, just because they made some simple changes. And when everyone on the team was reporting that they felt better after changing the things in the locker room. But it's something where, you know, for your average businessman, businesswoman, they're on the road, they're in a hotel, they aren't thinking about what products are put in the shower and, you know, the things that they're encountering that they're putting on their body. And that can make a huge difference in how someone feels.
How do you make an informed decision about products? Do you look at the label and see if parabens are high on the ingredients?
Well, and so there's a website, I'll just kind of throw out a site that's useful for that, ewg.org. And this ewg.org website, if about halfway down their page, they have a thing they call the Skin Deep database. And they've gone out and collected information on more than 70,000 products. And it's broken down on a scale from 1 to 10, with 1s being the best score and 10 being horrible. And so if you're looking at that and you see things that you're using that are above a 3, it's worth switching to something else.
Okay, cool. That's a great resource. And heavy metals impact the production of testosterone.
Yes.
Right? And aluminum is in every deodorant. Is it enough? Could you over deodorize yourself with many of the deodorants that are, you know, that have many of the common deodorants have aluminum?
What's weird is that I haven't found, and this is just going off of my experience in this territory, I haven't found that aluminum is an issue as far as the antiperspirant side of it. You are putting it on your skin, but it does not appear to make too big of a difference in someone's score on a nutritional test. I've found that people that wrap their food in aluminum foil before cooking it end up with much higher aluminum than people that put on antiperspirant twice a day. I would not wrap food in aluminum when you're going to cook.
And don't put aluminum foil on the grill.
That would be the same thing.
Same thing.
Cooking on it.
I remember when you shared that with my wife and I, we said, oh my God, like we've got a toaster oven and we'll throw like something that we need to reheat for our son on some aluminum foil so it doesn't spill. And I mean, it was like a little hot flash panic moment. Like, what have we been doing? And so, really powerful piece of information. Okay, I've got a couple more tactical things here. Let's finish on this nutritional piece here. Talk to me about caffeine.
Caffeine works great for bringing someone up a notch. My concern there is that if someone has too much caffeine, that sex hormone binding globulin that we were talking about before, you'll see that score start to rise.
And how much is too much?
When I'm talking to athletes, I usually say 2 cups of coffee or less per day is not going to be a problem. The problem is a lot of these pre-workout formulas have crazy amounts of caffeine in them. And so,
like 4 cups for
I know. I've seen some of them, they're 350 milligrams of caffeine, which is, I don't even know what would happen to me if I had that.
What is in a normal cup of coffee?
You're usually looking around 80 milligrams of caffeine. So,
she was. Okay. And how about green tea? I drink a lot of green tea. I love teas.
In general, a little bit of caffeine every day is not going to be a problem. Again, it's that extreme moderation where you're, putting the effort in to, let's say, maximize performance. So if someone's trying to kind of stay focused and alert and they want to have a couple of cups of tea per day, that's not going to be a problem. It's when you start going to the extreme of someone that's only drinking diet soft drinks that are caffeinated, whatever, all those things, that becomes a major problem. But yeah, that sex hormone binding globulin, that will rise if someone's having too much caffeine.
Okay. So. And then do sodas for a minute because you brought it up. How bad is soda?
Obviously it's bad. That's
and
not good.
If you're going to drink soda, would you recommend staying away from the sugar-free, zero-calorie, whatever,
I don't know that I've ever seen any soda that I was a fan of. So that's, for me, I very, very seldom drink soda. I don't encourage anyone to do that.
I totally hear you. And I think everyone that drinks it knows it.
Yeah.
This is the part about the behavioral change and the psychology of food. Yeah. Majority of people know what they're eating is not good for them because they've been educated, but they make that choice anyways. And, or they know even hasn't come from education, they feel like crap afterwards. Like I had last night, I knew it. There was a bag of popcorn that my son likes to eat every once in a while. So I said, you know what? Let me watch this game. And it was a sports game on TV. It was the end of the night. I was going to catch the last quarter of the game. And I pop open the bag. And almost 20 minutes after I ate a little bit of popcorn, I just felt awful. And so, I don't know. I'm sure that that's a common experience for a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess there's not much I can say to make you feel better on that one.
Yeah, no. Okay. What should our kids be eating?
The problem with kids, I think, for a lot of parents is their kid gets into a groove of, hey, he's eating a healthy food. Let's just keep that one thing going because it's the one healthy food. And there's just no variety. So that's a major problem with kids is just lack of variety. I'm kind of skipping over keeping out the junk food, but that's...
And when you say junk food, you're talking about packaged...
Yeah, the cupcakes and whatever, all the kind of processed, even chips and those type of things. There's not going to be anything healthy in that territory.
Is it bad or just not healthy?
It's bad. I mean, that's just... There's nothing that's a positive to it, and there's a ton of negative.
Brilliant. And then what about ice cream and the kind of sugary stuff like that? In moderation a problem or get it out?
I don't want to make it so that someone's kid has a issue with having a dessert once in a while, but it's a thing where, if someone's having a birthday party and there's some cake and ice cream, fine. But, having it in your house all the time where that's a part of the diet, it would not be a good call.
Brilliant. Okay. Now, I know that folks listening cannot, you're not a nutritionist, meaning that you give nutritional advice, right? Like, you're really very customized in, I'll open my mouth and give some guidance from blood work is really your sweet spot. And then even develop the meals to help you be more optimal. So where can people find more of you? Like your business website? And I don't think you're on social media, right?
It's funny. I've actually discouraged business, which I know for most people they're it's not being a good salesman and not being a good businessman, but I've tried to stay off social media and off the grid just because I've had my hands full. But precisionfoodworks.com is the website for the business. The nutritional testing tab would be the part that would be associated with what we were discussing. I know from a business perspective, it's a thing where I'm in the process of developing technology that will make it so that it's not going to be dependent on me to grow the business. And it's just a thing where there's only so much that one person can do on the nutritional review side of it. No one wants to work with the apprentice. They want the person who's got the experience. And so, unfortunately, that's been a bit of a limitation there.
Yeah, cool. And yeah. So people can find you there. Like, that's the right place to do it.
Precisionfoodworks.com.
Chris, thank you for your friendship. Thank you for the time today. Thank you for helping me be a better person based on the choices I make around food. And seriously, like, what you've offered me and my family and the athletes that I work with, you've made me significantly better in what I do and who I am. So I'm geeked to be able to share who you are and what you've come to understand with people. And this is for me that the best form I know how to do it. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad I was able to provide anything that was a benefit. I know that's one of those things where coming in on here was a little bit of an unknown because anyone that knows Mike and I know that there's a little bit of jostling that goes on. There's a lot of love in it, but I wasn't sure what I was in for. So
it was good. I think we're both unscathed, which is rare for us. And so good. So seriously, Chris, thank you. And then for those that are listening, I highly recommend, Chris is going to cringe when I say this, get over to his website. It's not cheap. Save up for this if you're in that kind of financial scenario. And if you've got plenty in your life, spend the money. It is worth every nickel to be able to know exactly the choices you've made on food, how it's impacting your well-being and your performance. So I can't encourage it enough for people to be able to do it. My experience has been when I recommend it to an athlete, like 2 weeks later or 2 days later, they're like, hey, do you think he'd do that for my wife? And I go, or my husband? I go, yeah, 1,000%. So it's like this gift that keeps giving. So highly recommend it. And for those of you that are listening and been part of this journey of finding mastery, thank you. And being part of the tribe has been fantastic. There's going to be nuggets and pearls of wisdom that Chris has shared on a second podcast called Minutes on Mastery, which is insights in less than 3 minutes. And if you're new to this podcast and want to subscribe, head over to whatever podcast player you're on. And please write a review for us. Subscribe is great. And please write a review. It helps us with the success of our venture here. You can also find me on Twitter at Michael Gervais. And that's G-E-R-V-A-I-S after Michael. And then Facebook, we've got a tribe called the Finding Mastery Tribe, and it's really fun. And so that's findingmastery.net/tribe. And then also find us on Instagram at Finding Mastery. So thank you, everyone, for being part of it. And that's it. So thank you, everyone. Chris, you're a stud. Yeah, thank you. All right. Thank you so much for diving into another episode of Finding Mastery with us. Our team loves creating this podcast and sharing these conversations with you. We really appreciate you being part of this community. And if you're enjoying the show, The easiest, no-cost way to support is to hit the subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening. Also, if you haven't already, please consider dropping us a review on Apple or Spotify. We are incredibly grateful for the support and feedback. If you're looking for even more insights, we have a newsletter we send out every Wednesday. Punch over to findingmastery.com/newsletter to sign up. This show wouldn't be possible without our sponsors, and we take our recommendations seriously. And the team is very thoughtful about making sure we love and endorse every product you hear on the show. If you want to check out any of our sponsor offers you heard about in this episode, you can find those deals at findingmastery.com/sponsors. And remember, no one does it alone. The door here at Finding Mastery is always open to those looking to explore the edges and the reaches of their potential so that they can help others do the same. So join our community, share your favorite episode with a friend, and let us know how we can continue to show up for you. Lastly, as a quick reminder, information in this podcast and from any material on the Finding Mastery website and social channels is for information purposes only. If you're looking for meaningful support, which we all need, one of the best things you can do is to talk to a licensed professional. So seek assistance from your healthcare providers. Again, a sincere thank you for listening. Until next episode, be well, think well, and keep exploring.